Welcome to Jade Explains Death, a place where the more morbid the curiosity, the better. We'll be confronting the one thing humans fear most, death. Each episode will be dedicated to a manner of death, and I will paint a vivid picture of how each would feel, as well as share some of the darkest yet most interesting real-life stories. Get ready, because we're about to embark on an adventure now. It's time for another exploration into death, my loves. I'm always excited for every episode, but I've been waiting for this one. We're going to discuss some of the most macabre and mysterious deaths. These are deaths that sometimes can't even be explained by science. There's a little bit of possible paranormal sprinkled in, and just some very bizarre vanishings that literally keep me up at night trying to find the answers inside of my head. Of course, my content may be upsetting to some and for mature audiences. Listener discretion advised. This first one is one of those mysteries that I just have to have the answers to before I die. And I think I have part of the case cracked, but there are still answers out there that I need. I need them for my sanity and my curious brain. Though I have a pretty healthy relationship with the spirit world, I'm not one to jump on the alien abduction or paranormal bandwagon when it comes to death. I first must seek out every possible rational avenue. Well, I've done that for this one, and I cannot eliminate potential alien suspects. Zygmunt Adamski was a 56-year-old, fairly healthy miner from England. His routine was pretty unremarkable. He did not engage in what we would call a high-risk lifestyle. A high-risk lifestyle is basically putting oneself in situations on a regular basis that can evoke danger. Sex workers, drug abusers, people associated with street gangs, or people who live in high-crime areas all have what is known as a high-risk lifestyle. Zygmunt left his home one day in 1980 to go for a stroll to the store to pick up some groceries. He was last seen wearing a suit with a watch on his wrist. Sadly, he never made it to the store. He simply just appeared to walk off of the planet. For 5 days straight, family, friends, and authorities searched all around his neighborhood. They canvassed any nearby shops, bus stations, and highways. Not a single trace of him was rendered. It was as if he simply didn't exist any longer. By the fifth day, his family began losing hope. Zygmunt was not a flight risk. He was very settled into his life. He valued his stable routine. He was never the type that you would suspect to run away to begin a new life. He was frugal and simple. He didn't have any major outstanding bills or financial issues. He didn't have a lot of money, but he had enough to cover his basic needs and lifestyle. He also wasn't known to be depressed. He hadn't faced any recent hardships that could possibly induce a crisis. On the evening of the fifth day, authorities were radioed to a coal yard in Todmorden, England. This town only had a population of about 9,000 at the time, so police were not plentiful. Only one officer was able to take the page. Of course, that officer had no idea that this particular night was about to change his life forever. Once he arrived, it took a few minutes to discover why he was called there in the first place. There were coal piles scattered about with various heights. The moon was already peeking out, and a thick, hazy hue was beginning to take hold. Eventually, he found the body of a man poised on top of a 10-foot coal pile. Upon investigating, the officer found that the pile was completely undisturbed. Aside from its new topping, there wasn't a single footprint or any coal dustings to suggest that anybody had climbed this pile since it was created. It was as if this man's body was floated through the air and placed atop this coal mountain. Once the officer got his footing, tread sturdy on the coal, and was able to climb up, he was greeted with a very eerie sight. He found himself with the frost reverberating up and down his bones. His stomach was hit with a pang of emptiness and cold. The dead man was glaring up at him with a pleading desperation. Now frozen in a perpetual state of utter terror, his expression was able to provoke a near paranormal response in the officer. He was quoted as saying, "Those eyes were staring up at me. I was looking down at him from a foot away. Those eyes sent a shudder down my spine. They were wide open." He had a look of someone who had seen something or someone that had scared him to death. Something or someone put him on top of that pile of coal, and something scared him to death. I can't help but notice how the officer said something before saying someone multiple times. It really gives you a clue into where his mind sits on all of this. His verbiage suggests that he may believe something other than a human could be responsible. Once the body was transported to the coroner, things got even more strange. In fact, the coroner was quoted in saying multiple times that this case was the most mysterious and strange of his career and that he still hasn't found the answers even to his retirement. While inspecting the body, the coroner found that the man had some extensive burns covering the back of his head, neck, and shoulders. These were second-degree burns that were nearing third, but that's not even the weird part. An unknown ointment was found covering the burns. It appeared oily but felt very adhesive. It clung to the skin as if it was forming a second layer or barrier. You couldn't just easily slough it off. It seemed to take on a plastic-like form when it came in contact with exposed flesh. A sample was taken and sent off to scientists for testing. Not a single expert could ever identify the substance. It was unknown to our world. The coroner ruled the man's cause of death to be sudden cardiac arrest. The burns could never be explained. No investigation offered any clues into how the man got on top of the undisturbed coal pile. The body was identified as belonging to Zygmunt Adamski. He was found wearing the suit he was last seen alive in. Strangely, his undershirt, wallet, and watch were missing and never found. Before I explain how his death may have occurred, there's a little more to this story that you need to know. 6 months after the responding officer found Zygmunt's body, he witnessed a very strange occurrence near the same coal yard. An unidentified flying object with strange lights in the sky seemed to be coming closer and closer to him. It could somehow just hover above with zero sound. Luckily, he survived his encounter, but he was thoroughly disturbed and confused. He quit the police force. Suddenly, up was no longer up and the sky was no longer blue. Nothing made sense anymore. Being a true skeptic, it was very difficult for him to rationalize through this one. Later, he was put under hypnosis, where he described being brought on board the UFO, where he was subjected to a physical exam by two non-human entities. He was then dropped back off in the place where he was taken. Of course, being a skeptic, he said that he believes he had actually been recalling a dream that his conscious mind had forgotten about. This actually makes sense to me. Hypnosis is very controversial in memory recall because it's easily tainted by suggestion. False memories can inadvertently be planted in these sessions, so I suppose we'll never know if he was recalling reality or a dream. Regardless, this entire case is still full of a lot of tomfuckery. There's another well-known case that draws a lot of similarities to Zygmunt's. Travis Walton was a forestry worker stationed in the Apache Sitgreaves National Forest near Snowflake, Arizona in 1975. He seemingly vanished into thin air while working one evening. Just like Zygmunt, massive search parties didn't render a shred of evidence. In this case, scent dogs and helicopters were actually utilized, which are very effective tools in disappearances involving lush forests. The search continued until the fifth day, when Travis just reappeared on the side of the road near Heber, Arizona, which is about an 11-hour walk from his last known whereabouts. Luckily, Travis was alive, and Travis had quite the story to tell. On the night of November 5th, he'd been riding in a truck with four other workers when they encountered a saucer hovering above about 110 feet. The saucer was emitting a buzzing sound that seemed to cause the men to feel disoriented. For some reason, Travis left the vehicle to investigate the strange UFO when a beam of light appeared from the saucer. This light knocked him out cold upon touching him. When he awoke, he found himself in a sterile white room where he was being closely observed by three short, bald creatures, humanoid creatures. Travis began to struggle and fight until a human, wearing a helmet, escorted him into another room. There, three other humans attempted to put a plastic mask over his face, which seemed to knock him out yet again. After that, his memory goes completely dark, until he found himself walking along the road in Heber, Arizona. It's worth mentioning that the men that Travis had been driving with were able to reluctantly corroborate at least part of his story. But just like Zygmunt, Travis went missing under eerie circumstances for exactly 5 days. Though he managed to live through the ordeal. The coroner claimed that Zygmunt's case seemed to be a classic scared-to-death situation. Just so you know, that's not something that happens every day. It is so rare that some experts argue whether it's even possible in the first place. It is absolutely possible, but it takes a special set of circumstances. There's something known as broken heart syndrome, where a person can die from extreme emotional distress or just severe emotional changes. basically ends up resulting in a heart attack. But it's difficult to detect on autopsy because it presents identical to other cardiac events. When we're scared, our body releases catecholamines, which include dopamine, epinephrine or adrenaline, and norepinephrine. The levels released are dependent on how big that scare is. If a very large amount of adrenaline is released in a short span of time, it can cause immediate damage to the heart, but it's still very unlikely. Our bodies are well-oiled machines. Of course, things can go wrong. We can fall ill, or our immune system can turn on different parts of our body, inducing an autoimmune response. But in most cases, we are built to be able to endure our defenses and our normal functions. Catecholamines are released for a reason. They greatly aid in sudden traumatic pain and can help us jump into our fight or flight response, which can better able ourselves to act to save our own lives. We're hardwired to be able to withstand these responses. However, like any machine, we can become worn down over time. Sometimes our heart endures damage slowly over a span of many years, making it unwell. Our diets, genetics, and sometimes habits can hinder their function. We can end up with arrhythmias, congestive heart failure, and blockages. This makes our ticker vulnerable. Sometimes acute trauma can cause a shock response, as well as an overabundant amount of catecholamines to be released. Burns are one of those things. Zygmunt had some nasty burns on his body, so he was likely already in a state where his body was releasing these chemicals. Additionally, he was a 56-year-old male, which gives him a statistically higher probability of having some form of damage to his heart already. Something obviously came along and gave him a really good scare, causing his body to release more and more of those catecholamines. This proved catastrophic. This triggered a massive heart attack. The only saving grace is that Zygmunt's actual death was likely the least traumatic thing that he endured during that 5-day span. It killed him in moments. It happened so quickly that his expression never changed from that of pure terror. He likely just felt a huge rush of adrenaline surge through his system, a sensation that we all know well. It's as if you're springing to life. You're in go mode. Sometimes a pulling sensation on the neck and arms occur. Usually we aren't too aware of the actual feeling as we are fixated on the actual cause of the scare and surge. But then it was over for him. He was released from his coils of fear and angst. I'm not convinced that whoever or whatever placed Zygmunt on that pile of coal meant for him to die. Something strange to note that could be completely irrelevant is that activated charcoal is known to help with a lot of ailments. We know this from my fellow millennials that it can be great as a detox, and it can also help relieve rooms of nasty smells. But in addition to all that, sometimes it's applied to wounds and burns. It's believed to not only help pull out any toxins from the actual wound, but it can also help to accelerate healing. Now, he was of course found on top of just regular old coal. I'm not sure if it had been processed in any way or not. I'm guessing it wasn't, but perhaps whatever placed Zygmunt there knew something that we don't. I feel like it's worth mentioning. I mean, it's a Looney Tunes place to leave a body. Obviously, it's going to be found. A regular old murderer probably wouldn't waste the time of dragging him up there. Also, there were no drag marks, footprints, or disturbances of any kind. Regardless of how he got up there, I believe that there's a chance he was alive when he did. So that leaves us with, what in the world did all of that to poor Zygmunt? He was just a docile man who was hardworking and sensible. He wasn't exactly extraordinary in any way that we know of. So why and how did he suffer such an extraordinary and mysterious death? I need the answers. Now let's embark on a journey to Vermont. There's a place located in the southeastern hemisphere of the state that has a large death trap. It's become so obvious through all of the eerie disappearances, murders, and strange occurrences that it's now deemed the Bennington Triangle, kind of a take on the Bermuda Triangle. I totally fell down a rabbit hole with this. I'm so struck by its painted past, so I began combing through historical archives, articles, and records. I have to know everything I possibly can about this crazy area. You're going to feel the same in a moment. What I ended up uncovering was a bloody history that predates even the infamous cases that many are already familiar with. The Bennington Triangle covers a couple of tiny towns, one that is now a ghost, and the Green Mountain National Forest. I'm not sure if you've heard, but really bizarre and scary things happen in national forests. As it stands at this moment, at least 1,600 people are missing and presumed dead. Every single one vanished from a national forest. Of course, some are likely people who got lost, attacked by animals, or fell to their deaths. But we have forest rangers for a reason. They're well-trained on the areas and are very skilled at launching search parties. It's a little unsettling to know that 1,600 people have simply disappeared into thin air with no evidence left behind. The Green Mountain National Forest is very remote. In fact, one of the reasons that the ghost town of Glastonbury is vacant is because a very large mountain peak with an impossible incline separates it from the next town over. The terrain is rough, and the weather conditions have never been ideal for crops. The growing season is so short that it would be a fool's errand to rely on it. Many news outlets like to report that the town was abandoned around 1937, but the simple truth is that it has always been a ghost town. Local Native Americans wouldn't dare step foot in the area due to the dangers and the alleged monsters that lurk within. A small number of families were eventually brought into the area for logging jobs, but it never lasted long. No matter what anybody did, they couldn't get this tiny town thriving. It truly seemed to be cursed land. The loggers and miners were brought in with a railway that ascended 14 kilometers and 9 miles. But the mountains didn't like that. A massive flood wiped out the tracks, making it impossible for anybody to travel in and out with any amount of gear. By 1930, the town simply had only one small family of three residing there. The three family members served in all positions within the town, including as office officials. In 1937, the township dissolved and it became unincorporated. All the way back to the 1800s, there have been disturbing crimes that almost seem paranormal, as well as spine-tingling discoveries and sightings. For one, the area has been home to a very steady stream of UFO sightings. They still go on today. A couple of monsters also seem to have inhabited the woods and mountains for centuries. There are countless sightings of both. The first creature is described as being over 6 feet tall, or 1.8 meters, and hairy from the tip of the head to the toes. Sounds an awful lot like Bigfoot. In the early 19th century, there is actual record of this beast rushing a stagecoach, knocking it sideways. It occurred on a washed-out road. Luckily, the beast seemed to spook by the noise of the coach falling over, which caused it to retreat into the dark woods, and nobody was harmed, at least physically. The second monster really gives me the creeps. I'm not sure if you've watched American Horror Stories, but there's an episode about the forest and something really creepy that lurks from within, and it reminds me a lot of this dude. This monster was known as the Wild Man of Glastonbury. He was simply a dirty man who lived in the mountains. He was human, but was completely feral. He didn't communicate with words, he was obviously unkempt and radiated a really nasty odor. Well, duh, he lived in the mountains, he didn't shower. There have been sightings that go back to the turn of the 18th century, but real crimes were committed by one of these creatures in 1967, allowing it to be added to public record. This dude was a flasher. His hobby consisted of heading into nearby populated areas to harass women. It was believed that he lived in a cave near the mountains in the National Forest. He would find a woman, pull open his tattered, worn-out coat, and jiggle himself around at them. He also held a pistol in his hand while doing this to scare off anybody who might try to detain him or make chase. There were multiple police reports filed pertaining to this creeper. I have a funny, not so funny story for you. I was actually flashed by a flasher once. I was a teenager and I lived across the street from a park, and my favorite thing in the world to do was swing on the swings. Well, this creepy white van pulled up on the side of the road, which was quite a distance from the swings, and a man came out wearing a trench coat. He opened it up and surprise, he was naked. All I could think to do was laugh, and he didn't like that, so he crawled back into his van and took off. I guess he didn't get the reaction he was looking for. Let's rewind a smidge. In 1867, a seemingly ordinary man began suffering from voices and possible delusions. He was a sawmill worker. He didn't have a record, family had no knowledge of any mental afflictions, and he appeared to be healthy prior to moving to Glastonbury. Of course, mental illness was not advocated for at the time, so this should be taken with a grain of salt. But this man gave in to his voices and bludgeoned his co-worker to death with a jagged rock. It left a treacherous sight. Brain matter and blood was found kilometers or feet away. The man was detained, but somehow managed to escape? Who the hell was on watch duty? Nobody ever heard from him again, but 5 years later, an eerily similar crime was committed in the area. All right, let's take roll call of our colorful list of suspects. We have aliens, feral men, Bigfoot, and at least one man suffering from violent delusions. So when we get into the list of strange disappearances, bear them in mind. I think considering the fact that a feral man has been spotted dating back to the 18th century, it's reasonable to assume that there have been multiple, possibly descendants of one another. Perhaps the feral women stay put in the forest. There could be whole feral families residing in the caves of the mountains. That is a beyond fucked up assumption, but that's what we're working with here. Mitty Rivers was the first man to vanish under strange circumstances. This wasn't just any ordinary disappearance in a national forest. Mitty knew the area like the back of his hand. In fact, he made a career out of it. He had keen survivor skills and was a seasoned hunter. Additionally, he took out tours of hunters to help guide them to safer terrain to do hunting of their own. This is something that Mitty did for years and years. Nobody really worried about him. He had survived scary animal encounters and getting lost on the trails early on in his history of exploring the terrain. On the day of his disappearance, the 74-year-old explorer was guiding four hunters. The year was 1945. According to the hunters, one second Mitty was leading them and the next, he was just gone. They called out to him and looked around the surrounding area but couldn't find him. They weren't terribly concerned for Mitty, mostly for themselves. They were scared of getting lost or attacked. Most of them just headed back to town believing that Mitty would have no problem finding his way home. It took about 36 hours for anybody to feel worried enough to begin a search. It was Mitty Rivers, after all. He was better off than most rangers in the middle of the mountains and forests. His family and the few locals were very dismayed when their thoughts that Mitty would return home on his own proved wrong. The first initial search rendered absolutely nothing. Not a single clue. As days passed and fears ramped up, the searches became more fevered and thorough. They continued on day after day. The only shred of evidence found was a rifle cartridge discovered in a stream that was known to be on Mitty's track. It appeared to match the gun that he would carry. All that this proved was that Mitty was actually on the trails, like the four hunters claimed. It seems that it simply fell out of his pocket when he leaned over. It really rendered nothing. After 8 full days of searching, hope dwindled that Mitty was alive. It got dangerously frigid at night. Fellow hunters continued to keep an eye out for him, but the efforts were pretty much abandoned. To this day, we are still nowhere closer to understanding what came of poor old Mitty. The following year, the next soul seemed to be claimed by the Angry Mountains, and this one is even more unexplainable. Paula Weldon was an 18-year-old sophomore at Bennington College. She wasn't an avid outdoorsman, but she loved an occasional hike in nature to clear her head. When she departed for the long trail in the National Forest, she was seen by many. Once actually on the trail, an older couple had been walking about 100 yards behind her. Paula remained in their sights most of the way, until she turned at a forking trail ahead. It only took the couple around 2 minutes to reach the same trail, but Paula was gone. What makes this so unnerving is the fact that there were no other trails around for Paula to detour onto. She should have remained in the couple's view. The only way to get off would have been to either turn back, which the couple would have spotted, or start sprinting a mad dash to get to the next trail, and she still likely wouldn't have had enough time before the couple turned. There were thick streams and mountain peaks around the trail. There were absolutely no fresh footprints of anybody heading off the trail. She literally appeared to fly away or vanish into thin air. Being a young college student, the searches called for every resource. Even the FBI was invited onto the case to help find the lost girl. A $5,000 reward was offered, which would be worth around $70,000 today. Again, absolutely no trace of her was found. Paula was not wearing a coat when she left for her hike. It was a 50-degree sunny day when she left, and of course with moving around, I'm sure she felt plenty warm. That first night after she vanished, the temperature dropped to only 9 degrees Fahrenheit. She would not have lived through that first evening. Also, had she been dragged off trail and killed by an animal, the search party would have found evidence of that. There is always some evidence of an animal attack. Considering the authorities had the exact coordinates of where she disappeared, they would have known to search all nearby areas. Nothing was found. The disappearances lulled for a couple years' span of time. The few people in the area carried on with their everyday routines and forgot about the potential danger looming in the National Forest. But In 1949, a new vanishing occurred. And yes, believe it or not, this one's even more troubling than the first two. James Tedford was a veteran. Vermont was his home. When he returned from active duty in 1947, he found that his house was completely abandoned and his wife was gone. He reached out to her family, who told him that Pearl, his wife, had left for the Amoco store and never returned. It had happened months prior, and his landlord was in the process of reclaiming their house due to unpaid rent. James was beside himself. He did his own searching for a while, but never got any answers. Soon after returning, he moved into a fellow soldier's home. He couldn't handle the emptiness left in his soul. He needed to be around other people. But Pearl's not the creepy disappearance that I'm talking about. In November 1949, James boarded a bus that was about a half day's trip from where he lived. He'd been visiting family. This bus happened to pass through Green Mountain National Forest. A heavy snowstorm struck the area, causing the trip to take 2 days rather than the normal 8 hours. Several witnesses remember seeing James in his seat, at times nodding off. Nobody ever remembers him getting up. When the bus arrived at its destination, James was gone, his belongings still up in the rack above where he was sitting, and a bus route book open on his seat. The driver never saw him get off of the bus. Nobody did. Some of the witnesses remembered seeing him in his chair after the very last stop was made. This is seriously some X-Files shit. Just like the others, James was never found. In 1950, 8-year-old Paul Jeffson accompanied his mother to go run some errands and perform chores. They rode together into the Bennington Triangle in his mother's truck. One of her stops included a farm where she was due to feed the pigs. She allowed Paul to wait in the truck while she performed the feeding. When she returned about an hour later, you guessed it, Paul was gone. He'd been wearing a bright red coat when she had seen him last, something that would be incredibly easy to spot even in thick woods. Massive searches were again conducted, I feel like a broken record, this time including bloodhounds. The hounds picked up Paul's scent and tracked it all the way to a nearby road, but then completely lost it. Coincidentally, the truck where Paul was last seen alive was within yards of Paula Weldon's last known whereabouts. Paul was never seen ever again. That same year, just 2 weeks after Paul vanished, a young lady named Frida was camping with her family in the Green Mountain National Forest near the Somerset Reservoir. Frida and her cousin Herbert decided to embark on a nice afternoon hike, leaving the rest of her family behind at the tent. Not far into the trail, Frida slipped and fell into a stream, soaking her clothes. It was a dry and kind of chilly afternoon, which left her with a chill running to her bone. She asked Herbert to wait for a while so she could run back to camp to change into dry clothes. She wanted to return to continue their hike. I'm sure you've already predicted, Frida never made it back. She didn't even make it back to camp. Once again, the mountain snatched up another person. Huge searches similar to Paula Weldon's were launched. They dragged on for not just days or weeks, but months. Her family refused to give up. Helicopters were deployed to look for her from an aerial view. That would have spotted her if she were anywhere near her last known location. Every stream and trail was searched multiple times, spread out over months. Even Frida's family frequently returned to search the campsite and surrounding area. No stone was left unturned. Not a single article of clothing or a shoe was ever found. Not a strand of hair, nothing. On May 12th, located in a stream that was in vision of Frida's campsite, a badly decomposed body was found. That very stream had already been searched many times and somewhat recently. The corpse wasn't there. Even though the remains told the story that she'd been dead for months and months, it had to have been placed there in the recent weeks. The body was ID'd to belong to Frida. It was the only body to ever be found through the string of bizarre vanishings. Sadly, it was in too bad of shape to tell anything further. No cause of death could be determined, but it's safe to say that an animal attack could be ruled out. Her body would have been found much earlier. What's so upsetting about this is that she was found so close to where her family was staying. It's almost as if the assailant wanted to taunt her family further to make them feel inept, like she had been there in plain sight and they just missed her. Could be a coincidence, but at what point in these cases do we accept that there are way too many eerie coincidences to actually just be coincidence? At what point do we recognize that these cases are above everyone's pay grade? They are so strange and just can't be explained by normal circumstances. I mean, is there a super secret X-Files unit in the FBI that we can contact about this one? Because damn, I just don't know. and I really don't like it. I really don't like the fact that I'm on the brink of accepting monsters and paranormal as probable explanations. It's really bad for my fact-seeking brain. I'm bound to have sleepless nights for the impending future. In 1950, the disappearances just stop. For whatever reason, the mountains decided to stop claiming souls. This makes my rational side jump to the idea of a serial killer, but these seem more like crimes of opportunity. The victimology is all over the forking place. Doesn't make it impossible by any means. It would just be strange, but so was everything in this damn episode. Of course, the strange occurrences didn't stop in 1950. I doubt that they ever will. Strange lights in the sky and trees are seen regularly. UFO sightings continue to this day. Strange sounds of trumpets in the sky and shrieks that don't seem to belong to any known animal are still heard. Our friend, Bigfoot, is still spotted. Large footprints are tracked. I think a lot of people started to think twice about venturing into the national forest alone after so many people, obviously now presumed dead, vanished. This could have had a hand in the disappearances halting. Of course, with the dawn of the internet and there being so many people who are like me, morbidly curious about everything, people started to go back. There is nothing like a ghost story or 5 or 10 to get people interested in exploring. Chad Abramovich from the website Obscure Vermont has an interesting story to tell about his own exploration in the National Forest. He claims that, along with a few friends, he headed to the infamous Forest Road and came upon a strange clearing in the middle of a bunch of hills. Upon getting out of their truck to get a better look, they discovered old cellar holes that were not visible to the naked eye. Most were completely covered with tall grass overgrowth. Cellars, huh? That's weird. What were they for? Did the mountain men have a worldly taste for fine wines? I doubt they were those kinds of cellars. This all just reminds me of some of those eerie forest ranger stories from Reddit. If you haven't ever read them, I highly recommend checking them out, just not right before bed. They talk of random staircases and creatures found in the bowels of the forest. As Chad and his friends were investigating, wild winds and cracking thunder rolled in out of nowhere. It shifted from a mild, warm, sunny July afternoon into a wicked storm in a blink of an eye. The group ended up stranded for quite a while because it was unsafe to try and find their way back to sanity. Once they made it back to flat land, they found that the area was bone dry. After asking a couple of locals, they realized that no such storm seemed to hit any other area. No local news or weather sites had any record of radar showing a storm. Robert Singley, a music teacher at nearby Bennington College, was no stranger to taking hikes in that national forest. He came to know the trails well. He always took the same route, and it almost always looked the same, except for one day. The trail that was now part of his routine didn't lead him to the place that it was supposed to. He was heading back from Bald Mountain towards his car. He took the same exact trail that he had taken many times before. After walking about 5 miles or 8 kilometers, he realized something wasn't right. He should have reached his car by that point. The moment that he recognized the issue, a thick, choking fog rolled in. Within seconds, it completely blanketed him, driving him to further disorientation. Everything surrounding him grew starkly dark as if trapped in a sandstorm. The only thing that he could see was a maple tree that was just feet away, and he felt oddly like it was calling to him. So, feeling like he was in a little bit of danger, he attempted to make a small fire to gain more light. He began gathering up sticks. After he held 2 or 3 of them in his arms, he realized that they weren't sticks at all, but animal bones. Every single stick that he found littering the ground ended up being an animal bone of some kind. Robert thought about his fiancée lying in wait at home, worried, sick. He knew that no matter what the hell was going on, he had to make it back to her. After a deeper search, he found some actual twigs. He finally lit that fire and stayed huddled close to the warm licking flames all night. Thoughts of the eerie vanishings continued to pop into his head. He just chased them away, determined to not be the next. Finally, at first light, he embarked on a search and rescue for his car. He did find it, but strangely, Robert ended up on the complete opposite side of the ridge. Luckily for us, he made it out of that strange place so that he could share his tale. I can't make sense of these stories. I feel like we're in Narnia. The only conclusion that I can arrive at is that there is something unknown to us out there. Is it the mountains? Or is it the wind? In fact, if you ever venture out to this mysterious area, you might notice that the foliage and plants grow in strange directions, in all directions. That's because of the wind patterns, or lack thereof. The wind is chaotic and aimless. This actually adds to the dangers of getting lost. We inadvertently use plants and wildlife to guide our way. That's impossible to do there. The plants seem to make zero sense. Back to the theories. If there are Sasquatches really hanging out in the Green Mountain National Forest, I find it unlikely that they're snatching people right up off of the trails. But you never know. Bigfoot is massive, according to eyewitnesses. It's also a bipedal animal, meaning it walks around on its two hind legs. Majority of sightings allude to the fact that this creature is actually quite docile and afraid of humans. But there are a few cases where they seem to get aggressive, like the stagecoach. Majority of instances, though, where they display aggression involve a human wielding or shooting a gun. This animal would likely attack using methods similar to both gorillas and humans. This is actually a pretty scary thought. Both fight dirty when they need to. A gorilla has a ferocious bite. It can apply 1,300 pounds per square inch of sharp chomping pressure. That's twice as strong as a lion. Bigfoot is known to be even larger than your average gorilla. I would surmise that its bite force is likely closer to around maybe 2,000 pounds per square inch. I also hypothesize that its sharp fang-like canines could grow to be at least 3 inches long. These are meant for ripping apart food or prey, potentially including us humans. Silverback gorillas can actually bench up to 4,000 pounds or 1,810 kilograms, 5 times that of a bodybuilder. Bigfoot, I'm sure, could beat that record. A feeble human would appear incredibly breakable and fragile if they went up against Bigfoot. The stagecoach was no match for BF. That beast knocked it over with one charge as if it was made of paper mache. If you are charged by one, it will feel similar to being mowed down by a big bulky car. Just that smash could cause internal bleeding from organ rupture. With any luck, it'll just knock you out cold because there's no way in hell that you are ever going to get back up again. BF will then likely stomp on your head and face repeatedly with its gargantuan feet. This will feel like you're being repeatedly bludgeoned with a cement block. Your nose will shatter, causing webbing, electrical, and throbbing misery to shoot in all directions of your face. Each new smash will reassault the oozing, violently bleeding break. Your skull can cave in, causing catastrophic damage to your brain. But if it holds up, that's even worse because of what will be served up to you next. BF will use its hands to snap you like a twig. Literally. It will grab hold of your legs and arms, snapping them in half rather effortlessly. Next, it will move on to your ribs and backbones. It might even dismember you in the process. This is kind of similar to how gorillas attack, but it will come along with even more strength. Death will come from massive blood loss due to organ rupture and other internal injuries, internal decapitation from its foot to your neck and face, or brain damage. No matter which it ends up being, it will be colored with agonizing sensations that you never want to become acquainted with. If these people were all killed by a serial killer or feral man, death could have come any number of ways. They would likely be just as bad as a Bigfoot attack. At least we know that the last victim wasn't sliced up into tiny bits while alive. Her remains couldn't tell us much, but they at least told us that. If they were abducted by aliens, perhaps they died from fear just like good old Zygmunt. Or maybe the first four are still alive, but living on board a UFO. I'm not sure if that would be a happy ending, though. They could just be the aliens' lab rats. Well, I still don't have all the answers, and it's maddening. I really hope that one day I will. My sleep could really use it. I would love to hear your theories on these cases. There are so many more mysterious deaths that I absolutely have to discuss with you. So there will be more episodes like this one coming. Feel free to drop any requests of mysterious deaths. Thank you all so much for taking this exploration with me, loves. Until next time.